And my name is Tyrone Burkett. I am a Presbyterian pastor from Cleveland, Ohio. And for the most part of the last week or two, I have focused upon journaling, maintaining a spiritual journey, your spiritual journey through your journal, with a focus on confessions, affirmations, recreation. And today we will do something we have not done before, and that's to focus on what I'm calling extrasensory experiences, dreams, and from there the sky is the limit in terms of how else we receive information. I like to start off with a review so that you can have the total context of things. How many of you have been in the earlier sessions? At least one. Oh, okay, well, we're on a roll already. You can tell me about the J car. Yeah, why don't you tell me about the J car? The J is what?
Journey traveling. Yeah.
And the C is?
Confession.
And the A?
Affirmations.
And the R is?
Recreation.
And what are the rules for maintaining a journal?
Write.
And you set the rules, but the main rule is to write, record. And we encourage people to do it on a regular basis, daily if you can. And if you do it every other day, that's fine. But I try as a rule, my rule is to do at least every 3 days. I try to do that. And in terms of the confession, whose sins do you confess? Somebody else's?
No.
You confess your own sins, not your spouse's or your children's. You confess your own sins. And in our sins, we are general. No, we're not general. We're specific. Because for every specific confession we make, we can anticipate a specific blessing from God. That's very important that we are specific in our confessions. And as best we can to record them. I mean, confessions are very tough, and we're very private people. Even we hide a lot of stuff from ourselves. But it's a place that we are called to be confessional. And in terms of the affirmations, you give flowers to the living. I don't need any flowers once I'm dead. I mean, that'll take care of itself. And you remember the little story I told about the man who came to a funeral and a bunch of flowers there, and he brought a bowl of soup, and somebody said, "Fool, why are you bringing that bowl of soup?" He said, "Well, the deceased will use those flowers just as much as he'll use this bowl of soup." That's right. So both soup and flowers, you know, you give to the living. So you affirm your spouse, you affirm your children, you record that. And people are not supposed to read your journal. I mean, that's a private place, but they may find some garbage about themselves in your journal, but they may also discover some affirmations. You should record your affirmations. You should write letters of affirmation to our children. We all need to be affirmed on a regular basis. We need to identify the blessings of God in our lives. Psalms 23 is one of those affirmations. Psalms 139, I read that for you. And so we want to be very intentional about that. And then obviously recreation is also part of the affirmation process. God is calling us to renew ourselves every day, to retreat, to get away from all the traffic, so that we can in fact hear God speaking to us. And we read one passage from the sower, where the sower throws seeds everywhere, and all of God's creation is pregnant with God's spirit, which is attempting to speak to us through rocks and trees and little children and our spouse. All of God's creation is endowed with the word of God. And at any point, we can discover that we're on holy ground and we want to take off our shoes and We want to cover that experience. We want to write it down so we can use those wonderful affirmations when on a rainy day like today, or when our well is low, because there will come a time that we're feeling very low in spirit, and then that's when we turn to our journal and we find those affirmations. Our point is, we are on a journey, and this is a spiritual journey. We do not travel alone, we travel with other people. And as we journey, we gather information which will help direct us and where we hope to go. And we gather information by a variety of sources. We in the West are preoccupied with gathering data through our mind. And that's important. We go to the library, and that can help you take a lot of shortcuts, because we don't have to rediscover stuff when it's already there. Just go to the library and read, you know. But the point of reading other material is really to help us in our own journey. But that's not the only way we acquire information. Who can identify some other ways we acquire? We talked about it briefly, that we acquire information.
The senses.
Through the senses. We talked about that. And let's give me some examples of acquiring information through the senses.
Smelling the bread baking in the morning.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Yes. Yeah, you know it's breakfast time. You smell the eggs and the bacon. And a little boy on his way up here, Wolf said, "Oh, this smells like Holden." You know? We acquire information through our the nose. And it's different from the mind, but it's very valuable information that we need to. Well, another sense is what?
Hearing beautiful music.
Yes.
There's a woman playing the violin today.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, when I hear John Coltrane play, sometimes I think I'm in the presence of the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know. The music, that's a way that the Spirit of God speaks to us. It's a very valuable way of obtaining information, and it's different from the mind. It's different from the smell, but it's a valuable source of acquiring information. Another way we acquire information is through the senses. We have five. I think we talked about three already, so there are a couple more left.
Touching.
Wow. I mean, I'm a pastor. I've been a pastor for a number of years, and I'm amazed at the number of senior citizens who live alone and are not touched. You can tell a whole lot about a person through a relationship, through a hug, can't you? You get a lot of information just through touching people. You know if they're stiff, you know if they're relaxed. My daughter Michelle has a natural healing way. She knows where all my stiff parts are. She'll put her hands on it, and it just relaxed. I didn't even know I was stiff there until she put her hand on it and relaxed me. So touching is a way that we receive information about us. And there's one more.
Taste.
For a number of years, smoked cigarettes, and I thought I was tasting stuff until I had, it's been about 22 years since I stopped, but I didn't really begin to taste stuff until about 5 years after stopping smoking. And I was just like Sir John Newton, who said, "I was once blind, but now I see." I once thought I could taste, but I wasn't tasting anything. You know, I can really taste now, and just wonderful to receive a special type of a vegetarian dish. I'm a vegetarian, so it's amazing. I can eat a baked potato and not put a thing on it, and it's just so wonderful. No salt, butter, or anything like that. And so we acquire information through a variety of sources. And so we don't want to just limit ourselves with the mind and our senses as we know them. We do a better job with acquiring information through the mind. We're not as effective, I think, in acquiring information through the senses, so we're not intentional about it. And so as we maintain a journal, it's important to keep a record of our senses. And a person in the last class asked me and noticed that I have colors in my journal, or pictures. I'm not an artist, but I know the importance of colors because my niece, who was 7 years old, taught me the purpose of colors and pictures in the journal. That's a sensory sort of thing. Now we're going to move to another level, extrasensory experiences. And let me start off with reading a few passages from the Bible about what I would consider extrasensory. And then what I'm going to do is share with you a number of personal experiences which I would consider ESP or extrasensory. And the purpose of my sharing is not to impress you. That's not the point at all. It's to prime you. That's all it is, because I believe that we all have those ESP experiences that we hide from ourselves and from other people. But it's important for us to be in contact with those, to validate them, so the information they're trying to share with us can be shared with us. If we deny them, we do not hear the message. If we devalue them, we do not hear the message, if you follow what I'm saying. Okay. I'll first read one from the Acts chapter 9. And this is a reference to the conversion of Saul, who you know later became Paul. And all the passages I will be reading are ones of which I, in my own understanding, think are ESP or extrasensory. In the meantime, Saul kept up his violent threats of murder against the followers of the Lord. He went to the high priest and asked for letters of introduction to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he should find there any followers of the way of the Lord, he would be able to arrest them, both men and women, and bring them back to Jerusalem. As Saul was coming near the city of Damascus, suddenly a light from the sky flashed all around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" he asked. "I am Jesus, whom you persecute," the voice said. "But get up and go into the city, where you will be told what you must do." The men who were traveling with Saul had stopped, not saying a word. They heard the voice, but could not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground and opened his eyes, but he could not see a thing. From Matthew chapter 1, verse 18. This was how the birth of Jesus Christ took place. His mother Mary was engaged to Joseph, but before they were married, she found out that she was going to have a baby by the Holy Spirit. Joseph was a man who always did what was right, but he did not want to disgrace Mary publicly, so he made plans to break the engagement privately. While he was thinking about this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, descendant of David, do not be afraid to take Mary to be your wife, for it is by the Holy Spirit that she has conceived." going to read one more passage. And if I can find it here. Oh, I have read enough here. I was trying to read another passage about the birth of Jesus, the announcement to Mary. Okay. Let me just share with you a variety of what I consider experiences. And again, the journal is a very private place. But as I started preparing for this, I discovered that I don't record ESV experiences very faithfully. I wonder why. I said, this is very interesting. Well, why is that the case? And I said, well, it shouldn't be interesting because I'm hiding from something or trying to deny some of these things. And let me just briefly share a few ESP experiences that I've had over the course of some years. My call to ministry. I was 16 years old when I decided to go into ministry. I remember my father coming to tell me a word of my aunt who had died unexpectedly. I was at a mom and pop store in the back burning trash when my father gave me the word, and I was in a state of shock because my aunt was so young. She was about 36, 37 years old. And all during that time, for a number of months, I was struggling with some internal struggle, didn't quite know what it meant. Was not the type of young man who went to church because I was too busy being slick, bad, and cool. And if you're slick, bad, and cool, you don't go to church because that's not cool. But at the same time, I found myself not being who I was because I was doing other things other people were persuading me to do that was not my true essence. So for some strange reason, when I went home from work that evening, I went upstairs to the bathroom and I looked in the mirror, and for some reason I preached this sermon to myself. And I'm not a church goer, I don't know Bible, I just don't do that sort of thing. But I preached a sermon to myself. My aunt's funeral was 2 weeks later, and that was because that was during the days when people still traveled by bus, and we had an uncle who lived in California, and we were in Detroit, and it took almost a week to get to Detroit by bus, so it was 2 weeks later. And I remember, as though it were yesterday, during that funeral, the minister getting up to preach, and I knew exactly what he was going to say, word for word, before he said it, because it was the same sermon I had preached to myself 2 weeks before. It was years later before I shared that experience with anyone, because I thought people would think that I was strange. I went off to college because I wanted to prepare myself for ministry, and had to pretty much pay my own way to college. I was short in terms of money and paying off my expenses, and there was a requirement that you pay off all your billing before you can be eligible to take your final examinations. And I was short a few $100s, and at that time I was in an AME Zion church, and they had a major conference, and so all the big shot preachers went to the conference, and they were trying to find people to supply the pulpit for several Sundays, and I was invited to supply a pulpit in Sanford, North Carolina, the AME Zion church there. I was young and dumb and did not know how to negotiate. And the minister there was trying to get me real cheap because I was young and dumb. And I didn't know what I was doing, but whenever he made me an offer, I said no. And I didn't even know why I was saying no, but something said, say no, fool, there ain't enough money. And he made me another offer, I said no. And he ain't made me another, I said no. And then finally he said, what do you want? And I just said, I'm saying no to all this, but I don't even know what. Then at that point, it told me what I should say, and I said it. And the preacher said, well, I don't know, I have to go back and talk with our deacons about it. I knew he was going to do it. I didn't, you know, I got what I wanted. And it was enough money to pay off my bills. However, I was still short bus fare back to Detroit. And it was my last Sunday there, and I was preaching, and people were very kind. You know, they make kind remarks, saying you did a good job. You know, that's not true, but they want to encourage you. One lady said, "Don't worry about it, son. You're bound to get better." But the last person in the line was a medical doctor there in town. His name was Dr. Simmons. And he came up to me, and when he shook my hand, he had paper in his hand. He said, "Son, I know how it is to go to school and struggle and not have enough money." He said, "Take this, but don't tell anybody." Well, I didn't keep my promise. I've told this many, many times. And I opened up my hand, it was a $20 bill. It was exactly enough money for me to buy my ticket back home. I had an interesting experience with Dr. Simmons. 20 years later, I came back as an associate senate executive in North Carolina, and I said, "I wonder if this Dr. Simmons is still around." So I went back to Sanford, and he was still there. He was retired, and I called him, and I said, "Sir, you're not going to remember me, but you know, you befriended me when I needed a friend the most, and I just want to come by to say thank you and tell you what I did with the $20 you gave me." And I went and I took my family with him. He was very pleased to see my children. And he said, "Well, I tell you what, I'm not going to ask you to give me the $20 back. Just pay me the interest." And I said, "Sir, that's exactly what I've been doing. You know, we're all called to pay the interest. We can never pay back the blessings we receive." But I thought that was the Spirit came to me in a very special way through an individual. He was an angel as far as I was concerned, because I could have stopped right there and gone back. That was another experience. When I was in college, my mother was in her middle 40s, and she was pregnant with twins. And I just had a feeling that my mother was dying. I just knew she was dying. I prayed very intensely. I said, "Lord, please allow my mother to live." When I went home that Christmas, and I asked about whether mother was ill, and in fact she was, and I was able to identify to the particular day that she was almost dying. I felt it. I remember when I went to seminary, I was trying to decide what seminary I was going to go to, and I was in Salisbury, North Carolina, and I heard about this ITC in Atlanta, the Interdenominational Theological Center. And not knowing anybody in Atlanta, never been to Atlanta before, I just got on a train to go down there to check the school out. And I went to the school. I didn't know anybody. I just went around, started introducing myself. And you know how you have a feeling that you've been there before? The president heard about my presence there and he invited me in. He said, "You don't know where you're going to spend the night?" I said, "Well, I figured somebody would invite me to stay somewhere in the dormitory or somewhere. Somebody would take care of me." He said, "You're right. We're going to take care of you. We'll take care of all your expenses." Something very superficial. We have a retreat center in North Carolina called Mount Trinity. It's very beautiful place to go. And the head building there, the major building, is what we call the Assembly Inn, and that's where all the big shots stay, at the Assembly Inn. And there are a lot of cottages and stuff around. And there are very few parking spaces at the Assembly Inn, because that's where the big shots stay, you know. But I consistently find a parking space in front of the Assembly, about 75% of the time. Have you ever had experiences like that? All right. Something superficial, but I thought it was an ESP sort of thing. Another experience I had, I didn't know what was going on until somebody brought it to my attention. I had a brief tenure serving as president of Barber Scotia College in Concord, North Carolina, and was able, through a stroke of luck or ESP or whatever, to have Felicia Rashad as our commencement speaker. Her mother was a graduate of Barber Scotia College. And it was a real big deal to have this big movie star coming to a little town, to a little school in North Carolina. We had a news conference. And we're sitting around the table there, and the press was there. And I don't know why the press, I think they think movie stars know something about everything. I mean, they're movie stars. I mean, they don't make them an expert on higher education. So they're asking all these dumb questions that I thought were dumb to a person who was totally out of their field. And you know how you see somebody going through something, you're trying to, this is what you say, you know, you're passing on information to them, you know, passing on information. I said, she's saying what I want her to say. And I said, this is really interesting. Her mother came up to me. What's the name? Just look at me. Vivian. Vivian Ayers. Quite a person in herself, Vivian Ayers is. She said, I felt your beaming thoughts to Felicia. I said, whoa. I thought I was doing it, and I thought it was just a coincidence that Felicia was saying what I was hoping that she would say. But her mother said, I felt you doing that. In 1979, when I was first encouraged to maintain a journal by the late Howard Thurman, I had a dream there in San Francisco that my mother was gravely ill. And I had some vivid descriptions of that, and I was awakened by the dream and was forced to write this down. Very, very traumatic. My mother was ill. I was there. My spirit was hovering above her in this hospital room. I wasn't sure whether she was going to live or die, but the sense I felt was, don't worry about it. Your mother's going to be okay. 18 months later, it happened, and to almost the details as I had recorded in my journal. My daughter just called me a couple months ago, and she said, Daddy, I was just visited by Grandma, and she shared some information. Well, Grandma's been dead for 7 years. And she said, you don't sound like you're surprised. I said, no, she often visits with me too. She visits with your Uncle Larry. I said, that doesn't surprise me at all. Dr. Howard Thurman used to talk about how he used to take all his troubles to the oak tree, his sins and his frustration, his rage. And if he described it as such that the energy of the tree was pulling all that negative stuff from him. Some of you have heard me talk about the brook speaking to you. I won't go into that. But an experience I had recently that I thought was really bizarre, and I never had one of these before that I know of, was a UFO experience. And Jenner and I had just gotten married, and we're kind of different, so we went camping for our honeymoon. Some people say, you ain't what? Yeah, we went camping. And we went to a place in North Carolina, and in fact, in retrospect, it was sort of like a wilderness area. We were the only campers there, and that night, at night as we were camping, we were in a pop-up tent sort of thing. I saw illumination of red lights inside the camper. And I said, whoa. And so I said, well, that's my imagination. I went back to sleep. And then, but I woke up, John, and I said, I just had a strange experience. I said, did you experience this? And she said, no, I didn't. Well, about 10 minutes later, it happened again. I touched her. I said, do you see it? She said, yes, I do see it. I said, whoa. This is the first time I've shared an experience like this with somebody. So in the morning, I wanted to check it out. I talked to the ranger. I said, was anybody else in the area here? He said, no. He said, no, you were the only campers here. And at night, we closed the gate so no one could go out and no one can come in. I knew that because if I had to go out, we had to go around the post there, which a vehicle couldn't. My rational mind said that it was a car going through there, and that was the car lights illuminating. Several weeks later, we went camping again in another area. Our daughter was with us, our youngest daughter. We had a similar experience, and she thought we were kind of crazy the first time we shared it with her. And at that time, she too attests that she experienced something like that. Things I'm flooding you with a number of things that I have experienced that I have been brave enough to admit to myself and in a public forum. I believe that we all have extrasensory experiences that we don't fess up to ourselves and much less to other people. Again, I said the mind and all the senses, whether they be extrasensory or not, are there to give us information to help us in our journey. One of the principal ways of acquiring that or classifying that is through dreams. Dreams are so important. This is why I encourage people to maintain dreams, because they're trying to provide information. I have struggled with it because, you know, you get in this New Age dawning stuff and Shirley MacLaine's and Ruth Montgomery's and predictions and stuff like that. And some of it is interesting. Some of you say, wow, I really wonder about this here. But as I say, you drive your own J car, and what's helpful to you and what is instructive for you is, and the rest you just push to the side. I want to stop now because I only did this, as I said earlier, to prime your pump, because I am sure that I am not unique. And I'm sure that you have had many, many ESP or unexplainable experiences that you dare not even share with yourself because you will be considered kind of strange or kooky. But, you know, I'm an old fan of Twilight Zone and all those strange type of things that happen. And I think we have a real interest in those type of programming because it's very reason that we all have these type. The experience with Paul and his conversion, that was an ESP. If you look at the scriptures very closely, the angels coming to Mary and to Joseph, Jacob wrestling with the angel. For whatever reason, we think those things happened a long time ago, but they don't happen now. I believe they happen all the time, but we just don't talk about it because we're 20th century people or 21st century people. So let me stop and let me get some feedback, or more importantly, an opportunity for you to reflect and share some things that you would care to share about ESP extrasensory experiences.
I think that it's, for me, I guess I don't use the term ESP, but rather the spirit realm. And I think the Bible is has many, many examples of people having visions. Jesus had dreams, with people being spoken to in dreams over and over. There's lots and lots of those kinds of examples. I think that, like you said, I certainly agree with the fact that we as 20th century people choose not to, for whatever reason, tune into that spiritual realm that was very much a part of Jesus's experience in that day, and I think probably the people then, and we just don't choose to become aware of that, to tap into that plane, if you will, of experience, but which is very much there.
When I was a kid, I was probably about 10 or 11, I had a kind of a religious dream. Mm-hmm. I had a sense of Jesus as the Good Shepherd. And for me, that was important because I work with refugees now, and the imagery of Christ as the shepherd, of watching over those who are lost, or just that kind of a role of caring for a flock, that type of image was very real to me after that dream. And that responsibility and the relationship Christ has with people, I thought that was real important for me.
Part of my recovery as an adult child of an alcoholic has been to work with the kid in me. And in the process of doing that, I heard a voice or felt an impulse that said, give the kid an allowance. And so I called the kid in me Muffin. And so we went and bought a tin with ducks on it, and I got a book, and $2 was what came up. So I started putting $2 aside, and then I went full time, and the kid said she wanted an increase in her allowance. So it went up to 3, you know, and I've been wonderful. There's something important in my recovery about that part of me having money to do whatever it wants to do and just to be a kid. And I go to a lot of movies with that money. Mm. And, you know, I've shared it with some people are very receptive. A few think it's kind of but on Mother's Day, the kid gives me flowers or something, and I know I'm doing, you know, all of that. But there's something about the process that I just needed to do, so I do it.
When I was about 13 years old, I went to a summer camp. It was a Christian summer camp, although my main memories of those adolescent summer camps were not particularly Christian. They were a lot of fun. But at the end of the camp, we had, it was in California, it was in the Redwood forest, and there was an outdoor sanctuary. And they did communion very differently than I had grown up. I had grown up in a Baptist church, and communion was done by passing the plates around the church, and we would each take a little piece as the plate was passed, and then you get a little individual cup, and the instructions to eat and drink would be given. In this situation, they made an altar with a split log, and the bread and wine were on the altar, and people were going to be called up to the altar to partake in the Eucharist. And I was sitting there kind of going, I don't know about this. You know, this is a little weird. And they had a time of silent meditation and prayer prior to the Eucharist. And as I was sitting there being silent and thinking about whether I really wanted to go up and commune, I heard a voice. And it said, come. Mm. And I kind of looked up and I looked around. And at first I thought maybe the preacher in the front had told people to come, but everybody else still had their heads bowed. Then I also became aware that the voice seemed to come from inside of me as well as outside of me. Mm. That it came from everywhere all at once, from behind me, all around me. And so I got up and went. It was a very commanding and deep voice. It's the only time I've ever heard a voice like that.
Thank you.
I don't know whether this would be considered in the same realm, but very dear friend of mine, one of my travel buddies, gallant in a lot of social nursing, and we were very close. We covered a lot of, as we consider, the wonders of the world together. And she'd had cancer, and it was cured, supposedly, and then another cancer developed. And the last time I talked to her, her daughter told me that they had her on a morphine pump. And I said, come on, kid, you know, you can't throw in the sponge. We have a lot of things to see yet. We have a lot more trips to take. And she said, oh, Mickey, I think that we've taken our last trip, but think about all the places we've done and all the things we've seen and so forth and so on. And then she tired, and her daughter got on the phone. I said, well, Janet, keep me posted what's happening. And she said, well, she's getting weaker and weaker. Well, that was on a Thursday night. On Friday, Thursday night, and about, well, it was right at 2:15 in the morning, and I was awakened, and I thought, and I was wide awake, and I don't awaken halfway. I'm just wide awake. And I thought, well, we can't pray right now. I'm going to pray for her. So I got out the Bible, and I sat in the kitchen, and I was saying to God, now, B is too sick to pray to you, God, for herself, but I'm going to say these prayers as though B was saying them. And I prayed. It was around 2:40. I went back to bed. The next day, her daughter called, and she said, Mama's gone. And I don't know what possessed me to say, well, when did she go? And she said, 2:15 this morning. Mm-hmm. And it gave me a real eerie feel, you know, really very eerie. And I shared it with my pastor. I said, you know, it was frightening to a degree, I said, but it was just eerie that it was 2:15, that I was awakened. It was like B was saying goodbye to me.
She was.
And he said that happens very often to some people who might be, he was telling me about another member in our congregation who at 7:00 in the evening, she didn't know why, she never went out and drove a car around at night, but that night she just had to get out and drive. She just wanted to drive, and she wasn't going anywhere. She just drove around town. And at that time, her mother had died. So I guess it's...
I'm a hospice nurse, so I work with a lot of people who are dying in their families, and they report stories that you, just like yours, time and again, are mm-hmm. just wonderful. It's one of the joys of working with those people, mm-hmm. those kinds of stories. And in my own life, my dad died about 18 months ago, and very important man to me, and he has spoken to me many times. He's a person that loved me unconditionally and was often able to advise me about things that were or weren't good for me. He had a way of knowing. And since he has left this physical world, I'm more aware of his presence and of his wisdom. And he speaks to me very often about very important matters.
Thank you.
But that's the one, that's the kind that really gets uncomfortable for me to tell people. And it's only recently that I've started to communicate to others how I talk to my mother mm-hmm. regularly when I feel the need to do it. And she's been deceased for over 20 years. And I feel that she still talks to me as well. Her words speak to me and still give me guidance for various projects that I undertake. And so I started to look at that in terms of my understanding of communion of the saints. And I thought about how Luther in particular during the Reformation would encourage the faithful to pray among the living, the ones you could see only, and not resort to praying to those who had passed on. But and I don't, you know, I'm not trying to judge that one way or the other. I'm just saying that the Catholic understanding of having some communion with saints is really valid for me. In the sense that I understand my mother as a child of God, who, if we believe in an afterlife, would have one. And I just find it very comforting that I can walk around my house now and talk to my mother and recall all of those positive influences that she had on my life. And you know, if I'm troubled, then I can tell her. Sometimes I tell her to stop messing with me too.
Yes. Oh yes. Oh yes.
Yeah. She does that all the time. You know?
Yeah.
Like she'll say, always go that extra mile and always do your best. And I'm working on papers until I'm about to drop, you know, trying to do that best. And I sometimes just say, Mom, you have to leave me alone. Now I'm not doing this paper. But seriously, it's a competent feeling to me.
Yeah. Well, let me share this. I'm glad because I wanted you to talk, and I want you to do some more. Let me share this with you. Back in 1939, a book was written, "Think and Grow Rich," mm-hmm. By a man of Napoleon Hill. And the book has been reprinted. If you find it somewhere, take a look at it. I think it's the last chapter in that book, entitled "The Mastermind." And basically, Napoleon Hill was a capitalist. Now he was trying to figure out how to make money. I mean, it wasn't for his spiritual journey as such, but it was, you know, make money. And so you try to figure out who can help me make money. What are the best minds out there who can advise me, counsel me, and direct me? And there he has a concept of anybody that you choose to be on your mastermind team can be there. So he called great people in history to be on his mastermind. Read it. It's just incredible. That was back in 1939. Now you get to people, contemporaries. Any of you are familiar with Tony Robbins? And his, yes, we had a conversation. And Unlimited Power is his book. He's on TV a lot selling his stuff with Fran Tarkison. And he uses the mastermind concept very much. And you convene it, you become the chairman of the board, and you have all these different people from history to come in, and they say they give information. Now, people, business arenas have used this concept, and some of them think it's kind of whatever, but they use it to make money. I said, isn't that interesting that they tap that resource that we've talked about so many years in the church, but really don't believe in the communion of the saints?
You know, it's interesting, like in the Orthodox churches, they venerate the saints. And, you know, they've made that an art form or a religious form of religious painting the pictures of the saints. But it kind of makes them yet living, recognize them as yet living spirits. But we don't do that as Protestants, I mean.
Well, if you are, maybe it's something about our theology, but I think there's something that I think these type of experiences would tell us over and over again, that all of life is alive and there's a memory. Remember the pottery example over there?
Mm-hmm.
I was so happy to hear George say that there are memory cells in clay.
Yeah.
I said, whoa, in clay, memory cells? They go back, he said, thousands or even billions of years? That's absolutely astonishing. And what happened? What's in those memory cells? Information. For what? What's the purpose of the information? To help somebody along the way. The crystals, rocks, trees. But we're not accustomed of thinking and therefore receiving that type of information. So we miss it.
And in terms of also stuff that we can do day to day, like protection and asking. I had a congregation that was very open to me in terms of this prayer that I used to do on Sunday mornings. It was the surrounding prayer. And I learned it from this man who was very spiritual. I'd met him at a retreat center in upstate New York. And then, I mean, he had people that followed him. He was a very humble man. He taught, you know, at one of the seminaries in Washington, D.C. But I started using the surrounding prayer with people that you repeat three times and you call upon the angels. And I told it to the children, and so I said, whenever you're in trouble or whatever, do this surrounding prayer. And I remember my daughter was out with a wild cousin one night, and they were driving home in the rain, and the wild cousin had been drinking. And, you know, she should realize then that she should have driven herself, encouraged the other one not to drive, but she said, Mama, I started saying the surrounding prayer. And, you know, and I really felt okay after I had done it, but the people at my church, if we didn't do it on a Sunday morning, they were just upset.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a part of our morning prayer.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a prayer that really does help. Like I would do it before an interview. Anytime you just need the support of the saints or of angels or to calm you down or whatever, you do this prayer and it's powerful. And, you know, and it just, it's a very simple prayer, but and I mean other people have different kinds of prayers that have helped them too. I've since met people that have certain prayers, but
well, the 23rd Psalm,
it's one of those prayers,
and
he said the parking, the car, that's called white framing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, whenever you want something, you visualize it. And
how many of you ever had that type of experience? That you, yeah.
Yeah,
it's true.
Or when you phone someone and they're ready to talk to you, you know,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah. All the things, all the
words. Yeah.
I just had occasion. I was out of the village and roaming around in my van, and I was ready to go to bed, and I started to go to sleep. I was kind of in that couldn't stay, and all of a sudden, my daughter said, Dad, call me. And I you know, almost sat straight up and went and called her. She said, oh, you heard me.
How many of you ever had an experience like that?
Yeah.
That was a very strong telepathic. I mean, one mind communicates with another mind, and it has nothing to do with time and space, but you communicate.
I had an experience, but I just thought of not. I didn't think I had any. But it was kind, well, maybe it wasn't like that, but you told me the word that it was
synchronicity.
Okay, do you know what that means? Or whatever. It's more than coincidence.
Yeah.
When this spring, when our pastor is going to retire in the fall, and so we were going to have some preliminary meetings on picking, on going through the call process. And our pastor's been there for 15 years, and I was just thinking it would be really kind of interesting to have someone who's not middle-aged white male. I don't think, just a thought. And I had met this person who was a pastor in London, Ontario, and she just impressed me. She was wonderful. She was absolutely what I would like to think, you know, could be my pastor. And so I was going to bring her name forward if that was appropriate. And then at the same time, I received a mailing from Holden, and I think it was in the last accent, and it was talking about picking pastors. And there's a video or something put out by the, what do you call them?
ELCA.
Yes. I forgot, I live in Canada. And it was about choosing pastors, a feminine viewpoint or something like that. And then the third thing that happened was I was drowsing sort of on the couch, and I had this the TV on, and they interviewed a Korean theologian who's female. She spoke at the World Council of Churches meeting or something last year. She was wonderful, and I was sort of drowsing, you know, dozing, instead of the wrong word, whatever. But anyway, she came on, and I was just sort of listening to her. And she was talking about the feminine side of God and how she now sees God and how she's been able to put together her Christian theology with her traditional Korean roots and how that has become really now what she believes. And she said that one time she was meditating or whatever, and she had a vision that this person came to her and said, oh, I'm so glad you finally found me. And she was a middle-aged Korean woman as God. Sorry.
Well, Jean, you don't be sorry, because you have been an example exactly what I'm talking about. We've all had those type of experiences, but we have suppressed them. We have not had permission to share them with ourselves, much less with other people. And so what we're basically talking about, first of all, in terms of our journal, is giving ourselves permission to admit them with ourselves so that they can be instructive for us and potentially for others. Now, we can't explain everything. There are a lot of things in life I can't explain, but I just accept. And for a long time, I went around with my call experience locked up in my heart, because I thought people would think I was crazy.
It often can come like a ton of bricks, though, you know. And it is true with events that all tie together, and all of a sudden, there's like this flash. I was in a working situation with a woman that was highly intuitive. And we would go out socially together, and one day at tea, we were having tea, and she just like shook. I couldn't figure out what's going on. And she later explained to me that that there was something that I needed to explore about my past. And I trusted her, and actually ended up having to face up to abuse in my childhood. And it was, it all turned out. I mean, it was good, but it was very difficult too. And it's kind of it's a real powerful process. And I've always thought of myself as fairly intuitive. Like, I mean, there's, so I connected with that and was able to go through that process.
One of the things that she said, she talked about synchronicity or something. I think a lot of us have those experiences and just brush them off as coincidence. Mm-hmm. And some of the experiences are real easy to brush off as coincidence. The feeling that you've been there before, or you see a face and you know you've seen that person before. I had one experience where not only had I seen the face before, but the voice and the accent, everything. Yet there was no way that we could connect, that we'd ever met each other. And she didn't see me as familiar, but I knew this person. But and since then, this person has almost become a mother figure in my life. Just that feeling that I knew her from somewhere, and even not even being able to pinpoint it, I would have been able to relate to her in a special way. But those kind of things we just kind of shrug off as coincidence or oh well, that just happens to everybody, and we don't really think of them as being extrasensory in any fashion.
Let me share this last point. Those of you who care to stay after this are welcome to do so, but I want to be faithful to the time commitment we have made. Some years ago when I was pastoring a church in Minnesota, I was trying to develop a small group ministry and helping people to talk and share and reflect together about a variety of things. And I had pretty much made up the rules. My rule was that we're going to have intergenerational groupings of people. I wanted young people, and I thought that was a good rationale. So we have a good mix because we have valuable lessons to learn from one another. And we had these gatherings in several homes, but I had a group that was pretty hard-headed, and they didn't like the rule, and there were a bunch of elderly ladies, and normally they follow instructions very well.
These were feisty ones.
Oh, very, very, very.
We know about them.
And they said, no, Tyrone, we want to stay together. I said, fine, we'll stay together. And that was four, maybe five of them. And they were sitting, and it's always good when you can sit at a table in a round circle and you can look at everybody. They were sitting at a table. And I gave a very, very simple instruction to people. This was the instruction. I would like everybody in the group to share a time when you felt very far from God, and also to share a time when you felt very distant from God, and a time you felt very close to God. So you had two experiences to share. Mm-hmm. And a sweet lady from Scotland named Molly. And what happened was, see, I first modeled that myself, and I shared a time when I felt very close to God and very far from God. So I modeled that. And you gotta do that for people. Because when you say it, you share your own stuff, you give them what? Permission to share their stuff. So she already had permission. I already primed it. That's what I was calling myself doing here. And Molly got in her group and she said, and she's talking about time, and her experience were tied together. She said, I was very angry with God when Walter left. Walter was her husband who passed. And I used to fight with God every night. I used to argue and shake my fist. And she was embarrassed, this saintly woman telling other Christians how she would argue and fuss and have it out with God. Every night she said, I would fuss and argue with God. And she said, but one evening I heard a voice and I felt a presence in my room. And it said, Molly, it's okay. I'm okay. And she said it was Walter. And he said, just went away. And from that point on, I was okay.